giant robot smashing into other giant robots.
This is the Giant Robot Smashing Into Other Giant Robots podcast, where we explore the design, development, and business of great products. I'm your host, Chad Pytel, and with me today is Nilan Pieris, VP of Growth at TransferWise, who provide a cheaper way to send money internationally. Nilan, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for the invite.
So how long have you been at TransferWise?
So I've been at TransferWise for 4 years.
Over that amount of time, TransferWise has grown quite a bit.
Yeah.
How has the company changed since you joined?
When talking about our progress and how things have changed, I usually like to talk about numbers, like how the business changed in terms of a numbers perspective and how the growth has changed. And then I think with that context, the people thing makes a bit more sense. Right? Mm-hmm. So numbers-wise, we're moving £2 billion a month at the moment. We're doubling in size more than annually right now in terms of volume and everything. And our growth comes from people telling their friends about TransferWise, a majority of it. Mm-hmm. And if you go back like 4 years, we were moving not £2 billion, but a few hundreds of thousands of pounds. Mm-hmm. We were growing mainly through paid marketing back then. And from a team perspective over that period, we've gone from about 20 people to over 1,000 now with offices all around the world.
So as VP of growth, what is your responsibility over that? What do you actually do?
It's a good question. What do I do? So I look after our products and marketing teams here at mm-hmm. TransferWise. Across product engineering and marketing, we've got about 300 people today globally. In terms of what I actually spend my time doing, I do three things. One is help scale our product, marketing, design, analyst organizations globally and work with the leads within those teams on how their organizations are scaling as we scale. Mm-hmm. Two is a bunch of my time is managing upwards to our board and working with our founders. And the third thing I do is as in any high growth startup, I pick up stuff that no one else is looking after. Mm-hmm. So up to recently, I've been running our recruitment team for us for my sins, but thank God we've hired a professional for that now.
Mm-hmm. So over your recent career, you've had a variety of different titles: head of e-commerce, web technology director, chief marketing technology officer. And it was in 2013 that you joined Housetrip and that was the first time that I could see that you had the title VP Growth, which is your title now at TransferWise. But how is what you're doing now different from what you were doing when you had those previous titles?
So just a point on titles. I mean, I find it terribly embarrassing, my current title and titles in general. I think the guys came up with the title VP Growth as an egotistical ploy to get me to join. It worked and it demonstrated how shallow I am. And since then, it's been frankly embarrassing and I've tried to get rid of it, but it's kind of stuck, unfortunately. Yeah, so I'm a strong believer that titles don't matter, especially in early stage startups. You kind of do what needs to be done.
Yep.
And different people have different things they can help with and have an impact in. Here at TransferWise, it's been always about building a strong culture that builds the product, that kind of attracts people, that are inspired to build a product, that then kind of delivers the growth. And working that, each part of that over the years is kind of where I've spent my time.
Well, how is that different than what you were doing with the same title of VP of Growth at Housetrip?
So Housetrip is a slightly different business. So today at TransferWise, we're 80% word of mouth growth, right? Mm-hmm. Housetrip went from zero to about 400 million in revenue in about 3 years, entirely through paid marketing. And so we were dropping, I can share because it's been acquired now, somewhere between 10 and 20 million on various points in time on Google annually. Mm-hmm. So something very similar to the booking.com model for Priceline model for growing a travel business online. And that had its strengths, that kind of model, and its weaknesses. And the kind of things we built there in order to grow were a team that was highly proficient in AdWords, a bunch of computer scientists writing algorithms that helped us mine and find new keywords, write our ads algorithmically, as well as doing our bid optimization. If I contrast that with TransferWise, I think less than 3% of our customers find us through search. Mm-hmm.
So I think we're getting around to what I was wondering about, which is in your roles, the actual high level thing is similar, which is figure out what we need to do to grow and to manage that growth. And but at each company, it is probably going to be something different.
Yeah. So my team tell me I'm terribly insecure. And what I mean by this is like I'm acutely aware in having worked in startups probably for the last 10 years that they're risky businesses, and building a sustainable product that scales is what matters. And hence, I usually find myself being accountable for doing that in the organizations I've worked in. That's been with a variety of titles, as you pointed out over the years. The thing I've learned most, I think, over the last 6-7 years, and especially here, is how you discharge that accountability is what culture is. Mm-hmm. It's a typical way in which a VP growth is hired is CEO founder goes and raises a bunch of money saying, you know what, we're going to grow by this amount next year, and it's going to be through SEO, paid search, and virality. And they do a little model with some numbers in there saying, this is what's going to happen. And then they start interviewing people saying, hey, can you do this magic SEO or this magic paid search or this viral stuff? And they go, yeah, sure, I can do that. And I can definitely hit those numbers because we can do X, Y, Z. And so they hire these people with these fun titles, and they come in to build a team to do this. And so then it goes down a level, and I would go and hire someone to do the virality and someone to do the paid search, etc., and tell them, can you hit these numbers? And so on and so on. And until the point someone realizes that these numbers don't work anymore, right? Or this plan is undoable. And then things slowly come unstuck. And so the thing I've kind of learned to do is there's a couple of things that are quite powerful. So one is to be clear that it's a very hard thing to say, but when you stand up in front of your board and the board says, like, how big do you think we're going to be in like a year's time or in 2 years' time? The right answer is probably you don't know. Mm-hmm. And you can share a bit more around what you're working on to figure out that and where you're focused and what the indicators of success would be, and be as transparent as you can around that. So that's the first big thing I see that I was quite weak at, and I've seen peers of mine be quite weak at over the years. So if you're not able to stand up and say that, the whole thing can come tumbling down quite fast. The second point is then to work with your teams and talented people that you hire in to help them figure out like where growth is going to come from. And you yourself is creating a conduit for sharing a view of that back up.
On your teams and in the companies you've worked at, how do you view failure or experimentation, and which can result in failure?
So there's two questions there. So yeah. Failure and experimentation. So yeah, it's a super trite thing, the whole like you should celebrate failure and all of that. And I think the easiest way of talking about that most practically is like when do you fire somebody? It's being very, very straight. So otherwise, it's just a bit of it's kind of Kool-Aid talk. And so I think the only time we've let someone go is if they're unable to learn. Mm-hmm. So saying you're going to do something and not being able to execute on that, or executing on it and it isn't has a big impact as you thought, it's pretty shit to let someone go because of that.
Right.
But if they do that, they write a retro on what they learned from it. They learn from it and they improve. That's the magic, I think, to create an environment where that kind of stuff can happen.
So what's something that you've tried and had not work so well and learned from?
Many, many things.
Yeah.
Probably a neat way of thinking of this is there's definitely a couple of product teams working on specific problems that I'm super passionate about. And believe there are big opportunities there. But in 4 years of trying, myself nor any of the talented people we've hired in have managed really to succeed in that. Mm-hmm. Probably the best example, it's quite an interesting one, is our own virality team. So at TransferWise, about 80% of the growth is from people telling their friends about TransferWise. 50% of that is pure organic, people just telling their friends because they love the product. 30% is incentivized. There's a refer-a-friend scheme that we've run. When I joined 4 or 5 years ago, that was one of the first teams that I helped set up. And after 4 years of running a refer a friend team, you have tested everything under the sun. Okay. So we've given away money, like lots of money, little money, various altruistic kind of schemes where you encourage people to do stuff because it's good for them, fee credit as well as chocolate. Okay. And what I've seen happen is we hire in these talented product managers and engineers, and they work on this problem. And then after a while, they kind of run out of stuff to do. And they move on to something else. And our numbers kind of, we continue to grow, but they're not accelerating anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's one example of an area that I've tried super hard to work on and not moved. The fun bit is always for me when we manage to hire someone in who manages to see it in a completely different way to how I've seen it previously. And they manage to see an angle around it, and hence it moves forward in a way I would never have thought of it before.
In that particular area, there's sort of a lot of research around user behavior and psychology and that kind of thing. How much do you take that into account in your work, or is there a whole team of people that are looking at that kind of thing, or is that not really an area that you're...
No, it's something we're pretty big on. So we have teams focused on customer problems, and they have kind of KPIs for measuring their impact on those problems. Mm-hmm. The business is a money transfer business, and the mission is to make money transfer move for almost nothing. So we obviously have teams working on getting us regulated in markets, driving down the price, making the payments faster. But we have two teams that work on emotions. One team works on reducing worry through the process, mm-hmm. and tries to understand the drivers of worry. Another team, the virality team, tries to understand the drivers of recommendation or evangelism, as we call it. The fun bit that teams figured out is incentives only get you so far. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of steered clear of behavioral economics and dark patterns to, it's kind of like, let's call it the Facebook group, right? Where you kind of right. like almost trick people into, hook them on dopamine hits, right? Mm-hmm. Without them realizing it, and hook them into using your product, right? The team just steered clear of that because we have a strong value of transparency. But the team got to a pretty big insight, actually. They managed to make a change that increased our invite rate by 700%. Okay,
That's a big percent.
And given this is 30% of the growth, this isn't a small thing to do, right? And they did that without touching the invite scheme. So I'll share with you because it kind of answers your question on an example of a behavioral insight. So what we know is that people use us because we save money. And the insight they got to is our customers all believe they save money, but they didn't believe the savings number that we shared with them. So when you go through TransferWise and you do a transfer, you get this lovely email at the end saying, your money's with the recipient, you saved $3, $5 on this transfer. And people believe they save money, but not the amount. And then what they did was they started iterating that email and how we talked about the saving and talking to customers and a lot of user testing. They got down to kind of what you can see all over our product today, which is you kind of explain there's a rate you see on Google. That's the mid-market rate mm-hmm. that exists. Your bank's rate that you're using previously had – your bank had this rate, which is usually 5% above that. Mm-hmm. And with TransferWise, we offer you that mid-market rate. So therefore, you saved – not just the tiny upfront fee that the bank is transparent about, but this giant 5% of the transfer cost that was in the exchange rate. And when they put this, like we call it a comparison graph, this comparison graph in the success email, they saw a 700% movement in invite rate, which kind of led us to this kind of deeper insight that helping customers understand the value they've got from your product drives the recommendation rate more than any kind of growth hack ever mm-hmm. could.
That seems like not only very valuable insight to TransferWise and might then sort of percolate through how you think about other mechanisms in the product, it seems generally applicable. You know, helping people understand the value of the product makes them want to tell other people about it or use it more.
Yeah. So I'm learning lots about product marketing, and this mm-hmm. has been my biggest insight on product marketing. So we've started defining product marketing as whether customers actually understand the value that you've created and how much value you've created. Mm-hmm. And we've observed a strong correlation between if you create a huge amount of value for somebody and they know it and are aware of it, they tell more people about it, more evangelical, your viral coefficients are higher and you grow faster. Hence, we can focus our product and design orgs on trying to help people understand that value. The two places that we've majored on that is in savings amounts. So we stand for price and being cheap. So the value is how much you saved. And the second one is speed. So 30% of our transfers happen instantly. And we had this whizzy animation that ran at the end of a transfer that says the money's actually in the person's bank account. But the question that I'm a big fan of, kind of user objective led design, where you're kind of clear on the objective of the design. So the objective of the whizzy animation was people should know the money is in the recipient's bank account at the end of the transfer. And we saw when we, with the initial animation, it was maybe 2 out of 10 people when we user tested it got the money was in the other person's account. If we optimized it for that, that 10 out of 10 people got the money's actually physically in the other person's account. Mm-hmm. Then we saw this, again, big uplift in recommendation rate, invite rate, as customers really understood the value that we were creating for them. Mm-hmm. So understanding the value your product creates and figuring out how to weave that through their experience of the product in the right way, in kind of a non-spammy way, helps create customer evangelism and word-of-mouth powered growth in product businesses.
For TransferWise, part of the main driver is cost. What happens if someone comes and makes something cheaper?
So the short answer is we're happy. because we call ourselves this fun, like hippie thing, a mission-driven startup. And the mm-hmm. mission is to make the world's money move at the touch of a button instantly for almost nothing. And the organization's a kind of catalyst for making that happen because, Chad, if you go back 7 years as a consumer, it cost you between 5 to 7% to move money internationally, and there weren't any options to do it. Mm-hmm. So much like Tesla as being a catalyst for driving usage of electric vehicles, we see ourselves as a catalyst for removing kind of the drag on economic growth that is Forex fees, mm-hmm. where basically you've got banks that own the infrastructure charging a rent to do a service that really isn't that complicated, that hard, or that expensive. But when I have to answer that question to my board, I don't say that to them. So the way I think about this strategically is, as long as we're, it's very much like the Amazon model, which is as long as we're investing our cash flow in driving our price down, which means driving our costs down faster than anyone else in the industry, we build a competitive moat around the business.
Mm-hmm. Also, you said that it's not the only factor. Speed is another factor.
Yeah, we've learned. So in the consumer business, we see there are 4 product pillars. They're the typical pillars you see in any consumer product business: price, speed, convenience, and service. Mm-hmm. On all of these things, we find that when we enter a market, we get explosive growth if we're much, much better than the alternatives, 10 times better. So we have to be at least 10 times better on price. Speed, getting near a same day and some portion instant. Convenience, like removing paperwork and paying with your thumbprint type stuff. And world-class customer service. So that those are the parameters of the product that matter.
So TransferWise launched in the US, was it last year or the year before?
Yeah, before. Yeah.
Okay. When you launch in a new market, particularly the US, I gather, was a big deal for the company, right? It's a big, big place. Do you build local teams? How do you think about that? How are the different markets different? And how does it affect the team that you're building?
It's a great question. It's a hard one as well to answer. The way I think about our code base and our product, it's kind of a similar way to the way Facebook does. So Facebook runs the same newsfeed algorithm, whether you're in Japan or Indonesia. So those markets are hugely different for Facebook. Mm-hmm. In Japan, hardly anyone uses Facebook, and they use it as a professional networking tool like LinkedIn. So very low daily active usage and low number of updates. I think Indonesia's Facebook's second biggest market. It's predominantly used on 2G or slower devices as well. So you have to have the same newsfeed algorithm powering both. Okay? Mm-hmm. And if you think it through from a product perspective, you can kind of think through how they'd tweak and optimize that. So similarly for us, we don't have a globally scalable product because every country in the world has its own proprietary payment system, mm-hmm. has its own KYC laws, know your customer laws, yep. that you need to meet for regulation. But we have a global code base. So the way I think about this is we have a global code base with local context. So the model we run is a weak product ownership model. Mm-hmm. Where we have a bunch of product teams that all discreetly own customer problems. We call those our central teams. And then over the last 4 years, we've now built out regional teams too, that own regional specific problems, usually to do with payment methods available in the market or integrations with local banks or central banks.
So how long were you working on the, I know it's not one monolithic thing, but to launch in the US?
Yeah, so we're live in probably 30 markets globally now. Mm-hmm. When we launched in the US, we were probably live in about 20 at that point in time. So to launch in a market, what we need is access to the payment system and a license to operate in the country. Mm-hmm. So we don't need a team on the ground in order to do that. Yeah, to build a great product in the US takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, and down to the idiosyncrasies of Federal Wire and ACH and the wonderful US payment system.
Wonderful, yeah. The wonderful payment system that we have.
Yeah.
But you mentioned you're a mission-driven startup, and so TransferWise is focused on international transfers, but are people in the US using it for non-international transfers, given that our transfer system is so terrible?
Yeah. As you know, when you're scaling a startup and scaling a business, you need to be very, very focused, because opportunity abounds everywhere.
Right.
And yes, people do use our product for domestic transfers in the US. There are great products for domestic transfers in the US with companies like Venmo and PayPal. But the opportunity we've got here, I think, is to move a significant portion of all the world's money in the next 5 to 6 years. And we're 100% focused on that right now.
Yeah. So do you have a regional team in the US now working
yes,
on the US?
Yeah.
But you didn't necessarily need one in order to launch.
To launch the market. Yeah. So to talk through a bit how we scale globally. So we have offices in Asia Pac, in Tokyo, Sydney, Singapore, and Malaysia, in Europe, in Budapest, Ukraine, and Estonia, and in the US in Tampa and New York. To scale our product globally, we need to build out about four functions: product engineering, customer support, payment operations. 99% of the world's banks don't have APIs, or there are problematic payments that need people as well, and compliance ops as well. Now, in some regions, you would co-locate all of those.
Yep.
So in Singapore, in Asia Pac, we actually co-locate most of them. But in other regions like the US, we wouldn't run a call center out of New York.
And do you silo is probably the wrong word, but do you have regional product engineering as well?
We do have regional product engineering teams, and they're generally based in the region.
Yeah. So you mentioned that one of the problems you're solving now in terms of your attention and growth energy is on recruiting. Are you doing that across everywhere, all locations? How are you? What does that look like for you now?
So it's quite a fascinating funnel. So we had 15,000 people apply to us last year. We hired 300 people.
Yeah,
it's like as we tell them, they're very special. So we're hiring globally. We have a recruitment team that supports our teams in hiring. Teams need to own their own hiring. A recruiter can't magically make someone want to work with you and take them through the interview process and give them an offer. They're there to support you with that. But we're hiring globally, and we have pipelines in each of our regions, in each of the capabilities I talked through earlier.
So how are you helping with that process then?
My role, it's just building teams. It's just the very much the people stuff on how you hire, grow, support teams, scaling globally, and helping the teams work through all the things that they do on a day-to-day basis. So not at the helping them think through their employer brand or reviewing their pipeline numbers, just much more on the people soft side than anything else. The bits I think we've done particularly well that I've helped a bit with is within a year or two of my getting here, we managed to build a brand of being one of the best product engineering companies in Europe to work for. And that's definitely been our strategy in trying to think through how, given the complexity of the problems that we're solving, say in compliance or in finance, building a brand with an audience where we can find the kinds of talent that we need in order to solve that globally has become quite critical to our success in recruitment.
Yeah, I must say, for everything I've heard, really good reputation for that and really well-respected brand, not only with consumers, but with the engineers who work at the company.
I was going to say, it's all lies, but it's actually true.
obviously you've scaled a lot. One of the challenges that we've had at Thoughtbot is over the course of scaling, and nowhere near at the level TransferWise is, but the majority of people who were in leadership positions at first were people who were already at the company and were promoted into those positions. So we sort of have this culture of promoting from within, but we've reached a certain scale where there's not necessarily that pipeline of people who are ready to be promoted at all of the different levels of leadership that we need. And it's been a real challenge to, for us at least, to attract people into leadership positions and know that they'll be able to be successful in the role. Is that something that you faced?
So the fun thing about, let's start with our growth, right? The fun thing about our growth is that we're not in control of it. Mm-hmm. Our customers tell their friends and we end up with doubling in size. Now, the fun bit is if the volume of transfers doubles in size, it means certain teams need to double.
Right.
So we'll have double the number of customer contacts. So we need to double a pretty big customer support team.
Yeah.
We need to double the size of the payment operations team. We need to double the size of the recruitment team in order to hire all these people, mm-hmm. etc. So all the transactional teams that scale with transaction count have to scale quite rapidly. Now, there were points in time in the last year where we were doubling in size every 6 months or 3 months in volume. That's clearly unsustainable because right. you cannot double a team in that kind of speed.
Right.
And it's dangerous to do that. If you do that, you'll kill the company, right?
Just mm-hmm.
So what happens is there's an organic growth rate at which you can grow the team at its peak. That's hiring people, onboarding them, helping them figure us out, and then helping them have an impact. And what happens is as the growth rate accelerates away from the organic rate at which you can grow the team, it opens up what I call your, how to say this without swearing, but the likelihood of screw ups. Okay. It's called that.
Right.
It kind of opens up as the volume grows faster, then you're hiring people that can service the volume effectively mm-hmm. and hiring leaders that can support the people that are, or growing leaders that can support the people who you're hiring. And then inevitably a screw up happens. And our NPS is 86%. We're really proud of it, but it will begin to drop. And as the NPS drops, the growth rate drops. And then it catches back up with where the organic team growth rate's at. And then all's fine for a bit. And again, the growth rate then starts taking off again.
Mm-hmm.
And the last 2 years of my life have been like that. And I think the next 4 years are going to be like that as well. So that's very much what the job is, figuring out how to manage that. So specifically, it becomes very clear where you're missing, just call it people leaders.
Yeah.
In terms of subject matter expertise, I've learned the hard way. It's very hard to hire magical people that are going to tell you the answer to solving something, mm-hmm. right? These magical people don't exist. And if they do, they're usually bad culture fits. Right?
Yeah.
So, but definitely people that can help look after people, teams of 10, 20, 100 people, mm-hmm. make sure they want to turn up to work, help them work through the challenges and issues they have on a day-to-day basis, help them think through problems as well. And you will grow those people at a rate from your team, but at times you'll need to hire them in. And there is a rate at which you can hire those people in. You hire in too many, they're going to really get lost and struggle to look after their teams, and their teams will leave. So again, there's a natural rate at which you can do that.
So it sounds like you've experienced a similar problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I haven't found any easy answers to that.
So what's next for TransferWise for you? What's on the horizon that either has you excited or worried?
So we've been profitable for 2 years now, which mm-hmm. is great.
Yeah.
One thing, so you know, like the business is in a good place and then some sense has made it. The interesting is what's next. So in building this great consumer business, we built this underlying infrastructure that's relevant to businesses and banks. So 20% of our volume is B2B today. It's growing much faster than consumer. And I could see it being half of our volume in the next few years.
Hmm.
Banks have started using TransferWise as well. So it turns out that their customers trust TransferWise to do a money transfer more than their bank. And so a couple of far-sighted banks in Europe, it's a couple of the major banks in Europe, I can't share their names, have signed contracts with us, and we're working through implementations where they will offer TransferWise money transfers to their customers. Given 90% of the world's money moves through banks, and we don't think we're going to get 90% of the world to download our app, in order to make the world's money move for almost nothing, this has to be part of our strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So we've opened up an API, and we have banks using that. On the business side, that breaks into three parts. Businesses using our APIs. So companies very similar to Uber that have a high volume of cross-border invoicing use our APIs. We have mass payment of invoices, where you can just upload a spreadsheet with your payees every month, and the payments will go out. The other big driver is high value transfers, where we built a product that makes us pretty competitive between $100,000 to $1 million mark as well. Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of next big challenges for us to work through over the next few years.
That's exciting stuff. I wish you and TransferWise the best of luck.
Thanks very much.
If people want to get in touch with you or follow along, where's the best place that they could do that?
Best place is to hit me up on Twitter. I'm Nilanp, N-I-L-A-N-P. Or follow us on TransferWise at Twitter as well.
Nilan, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, and I hope you did, do me a favor and tell a friend about it. It really does help. You can subscribe to the show and find notes for this episode at giantrobots.fm. If you have questions or comments, email us at hosts@giantrobots.fm. And you can find me on Twitter at cpytel. This podcast is brought to you by Thoughtbot and produced and edited by Tom Obarski. See you next time, and thanks for listening.
This podcast was brought to you by Thoughtbot. We are experienced designers and developers who turn your idea into the right product. With local studios in Boston, San Francisco, New York, London, Austin, and Raleigh, let's build something great together.